Yeah.
Yes, for not.
For not. From the all perfect.
From the all perfect.
For none.
For none.
Now Prabhupada translates it as complete unit.
Complete unit.
Yeah. Okay. Udachyate.
Udachyate.
Is produced. And when the sun is coming up, what's it called? What kind of kirtan is it when the sun is coming up?
Udaya.
Udaya. Udaya. Udaya. Udaya coming up, producing. Purnasya.
Purnasya.
Of the complete.
Of the complete.
And this is from the complete and of the complete. I don't know what's the difference. These words are of Krishna.
Krishna.
Yeah, and these words are from Krishna. Yeah. Of and from. A little subtle difference there. Purnam. Completely. Adaya. Having been taken away. Purnam. The complete balance. Eva.
Even.
Abhasishyate.
Is remaining.
So I have a real suspicion that, you know, Mayavadi Sanskritists and different people really get into like arguing about, you know, exactly how this is translated like that. And the Jiva Goswami probably has he has a gigantic commentary on this from the Vedic literatures, and depending when one word follows another, it means something else. One more time. Om Purnam Adaya Purnamidam.
Om Purnam Adaya Purnamidam.
Purna Purnam Udatsate.
Purna Purnam Udatsate.
Purnasya Purnam Adaya.
Purnasya Purnam Adaya.
Purnameva Vasishyate.
Purnameva Vasishyate.
The personality of Godhead is perfectly complete. Please repeat.
The personality of Godhead is perfectly complete.
And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced from the complete is also complete in itself. Because he is a complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains a complete balance. Purnam udachyate, purnasya purnam adaya, purnam eva vasishyate. Yeah. It's a very nice Sanskrit grammar. So this is, so tonight we're going to read text number 17. Yeah. We've been mentioning this before, that, you know, some people only accept the original Veda as being authorized, being perfect. You know, it's three Vedas, Chatur Vedas, you know, four Vedas, three Vedas, you know, and three Vedas, three Vedas. What's up with that? Yeah, because what would the name be in Bengali? There's Chaturvedi, Trivedis. They get a caste name.
Upadhyay.
Huh?
Upadhyay.
Huh?
Last name.
Yeah, Upadhyaya, Bandopadhyaya, like that. You know, they get different names. Yeah. Chatterjee, I think this comes from the four Vedas. Yeah. Yeah, Chatterjee is short for something else. Banerjee is short for Bandopadhyaya. Yeah. Chatterjee is short for something else.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, so the whole caste, the whole big culture, you know, thousands and millions of people for thousands of years, you know, developed on these ideas and this culture like that. Yeah. So to say something is different or something is like this or that is challenging an entire community, how they look at it, how they understand it. So some of them consider that, you know, even Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva isn't the only person in this culture who's considered to be an acharya. You know, Well, Shankaracharya is following Vyasadeva. He claims to be following Vyasadeva, other personalities also. But Patanjali is not necessarily following Vyasadeva. In India, they're what are called Sadarshan, six perspectives. You know, Jaimini, Astavarga, Kanada, Patanjali, Vyasa, maybe one more or something. Kabir's one or not, maybe he is. Yeah. But these are like six big principal philosophers.
Patanjali?
I mentioned him, yeah. Kanada, Karma Mimamsa, Astavarga. Karma Mimamsa is. So they each have their own school of philosophy, their own idea about things. And how much they're based upon the Vedas and stuff like that, I'm not sure exactly. But Vyasadeva is, Vyasa means to divide, the word Vyasa. So we say Veda Vyas. Because the Veda was one, it was transcendental, it came from the, from Brahma. He heard it from through his eight ears, the sound of Krishna's flute came in through his 8 ears and came out of his mouth as the Kama Gayatri, or a very big culture, again, with thousands and millions of people and focusing on this in different ways. So this whole thing developed, from transcendental level, and the Veda was one, everything was an Om, Pranava Omkar. Chaitanya criticizes Shankaracharya because he says, without authorization from anybody, from his acharya, Vyasadeva, or anybody, he changed the emphasis from the Omkara to Om Tat Sat, which is also mentioned in the Vedas. It's also an aspect. It's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Om Tat Sat. Tattvam Asmi. Tattvam Asmi. Thou art that. Or you are God. That's very how he's interpreting it. You are that supreme. You are that supreme. Right? So, no, the basis of all these things is the pranava om. Om. Om.
Om.
And chanting that properly, open up your entire breathing apparatus.
Om.
From the bottom and closing it down in the front, right? In with the dot is nasal.
Om. Om.
At the same time for 3 hours. So it has effect. You meditate on different things. We meditate on Radha, the Jivas, and Krishna. It's the three parts. So actually in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So you find from time to time, you'll find this is discussed, from time to time in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam, little by little, in different comments are there by Prabhupada, because we're part of this culture. So some people only really accept the maybe one Veda, Sama Veda or something, as being the real Veda, and then other things being later. And the Sama Atharva is considered like kind of like practical stuff, and really the most mongrel, biggest collection of odd things. Radhika says whenever anything is kind of discovered or or this and that, they say, it was a part of the Atharva Veda. It's kind of like, people even do that. But in the Sama Veda, the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, and the Yajur Veda, Rig Veda, I think, is considered the oldest. And in there is mentioned the story of, Vritasura. This is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's pretty famous Puranic story. Some of these, and about Puranic, but even Vedic. So some of these things are mentioned, in Bhagavatam. They're mentioned in other places. It's not like it's the only place it appears is in Srimad Bhagavatam. And there may be a little bit different variation. The story may include more details. So how much has actually been changed or accepted, we don't know. Sometimes there are commentaries. Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda. So, some people accept only three Vedas. They don't accept the Atharva Veda. Some two Vedas and some one Veda, like that. And how much is actually left? you know, different parts have disappeared, or you know, this or that have been added. You know. So that's all called Shruti. Any listening? Wait to you. Shruti means that which is heard, right? Heard directly. And so then the other literatures, I was reading today in the Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami, according to the saintly persons, there's no reference where it came from. And they say that the Vedas are the mother, yeah? And the daughters are the Shrutis, and Smriti scriptures, and the Puranas are the brothers, like that. Yeah? So if somebody's listening to a great professor and you don't understand what the professor says exactly, you can only catch about 25% or 15%. Then afterwards, some senior student says, "Oh, okay, you understand?" You say, "Well, a little bit." He says, "Okay, well, listen, it's like this. When he says that, it means this and that." And you go, "Oh, okay, now I see. What about that? It's because of this." And, "Oh, okay." So that's Shruti, Smriti. Smriti means to meditate, to appreciate, to remember, right? So from our point of view, the Smriti is more important, you know, more useful than the Shruti. Because this is what the great personalities like Vyasadeva and others have been produced. You know, Mahabharata and Bhagavad Gita are?
Smriti.
But some people don't accept those. You know. So we have Mahabharata, we have so many things from Prabhupada, from Parampara, but the only thing we have that is actually Shruti is? Isa Upanishad. One place, where is it now? Anjana Sudha Academy test here. The 108 Upanishads are listed in Prabhupada's books. Where is that? Want the exact reference. Book? No, maybe. Is it there? You think so? I know from that. Which chapter? Which part? Adi Lila, chapter 7, text number 108. That's the Lord Chaitanya Five Features. And Prabhupada published it as a separate book. Yeah. Yeah, first off, like a little book. It's a very, it's a Panchatattva. So, 17108, CC 17108. And there's number 108, very interesting. But, if you go through all of them, one name is mentioned twice. Maybe there's one Upanishad, or two Upanishads of the same name, I don't know, or else there's a mistake like that. You know. Probably just wait to see who catches that. But out of these, I forgot how many. Number 14 comes to my diminutive brain. But there's a certain number of Upanishads that are accepted by all these people as being more prominent, being more potent. And the Isa Upanishad is one of those, if not the foremost. And there's the Katha Upanishad, the Mundaka Upanishad, the Svetashvara Upanishad. So this is pretty tough, you know, knowledge. Is it the Katha Upanishad? Prabhupada quotes it many, many times. Nityo nityanam chetanash chetananam eko bahunam yogididati kama. That's 2, 13. Yeah, it's 2, 13 in the Katha Upanishad. And it's mentioned in the first part of the Bhagavad Gita, but he cites it many, many times. It's very potent. So remember one lecture, one conference that Kridainana Maharaj was invited there to come to this. And he was Brahmachari still, like that. But he was like studying, like an enthusiastic guy, and you know, hearing from Prabhupada. And then he went there, and there's one professor named Bharati. You know, and he was very kind of like arrogant, you know, Brahmin. Mayavadi, maybe Shankara, top Indian guy, and you know, oh, here comes these monkeys. So see these monkeys, they're learning Sanskrit. Look at the monkeys. You know, very, very insulting and supercilious. You know. So Kridainana Maharaj is, you know, he made some presentations with Bharati, and then Kridainana Maharaj is making some presentation, and Dr. Bharati is being very, I guess, super sarcastic about it. But then Kridainana Maharaj quotes this verse. In the Vedas it says, in the Katha Upanishad, 2:12, this follow Prabhupada said, Nityo Nityanam. And then Mr. Bharati says, "Why did you say that? Why did you quote that? Why did you quote that? Why did you quote that?" It was like, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't know. It was like this crazy, you know. And after that, he was completely insane. I was like a monkey was going to hop off a chair and do something obscene in front of everybody. It was like, instead of like arguing, it was actually kind of like this afraid he would, you know, do something embarrassing. The monsters are trying to escape there. We're discussing Veda. So the people who it's kind of like, even if you deal with these things as an idiot, as a monster, as an enemy, they're so potent that you can't avoid appreciating this, your potency here. So in any case, then Professor Bharati was appreciating that these verses are very potent. It's very clear. And even this Sanskrit here, I'm just looking at it myself, analyzing a little bit. Yeah, it's just kind of, you know, purna purnam udachate purnasya purnam adhaha. So it seems like definitely like adjectives for purnam. Om purnam adhaha purnamidam. So it's pretty clear. That, and the idea is, this is part of which of the four Vedas? Yajur Veda. Probably seeing that these Vedas, these Upanishads, are like the headlines. You're going through the paper and it says, man bites dog. That. Oh, I want to read that article. Man bites dog. Space shuttle launched successfully. Okay, so that's the real thing. That's the real story right there. The space shuttle was launched successfully. Okay? So Prabhupada says these Upanishads are like the headlines in the Vedas, the philosophical portions. They deal with so many things. You can worship this god and that god, and you can go to heaven, and you can do all these things. The Upanishads especially deal with the ontological portions, the epistemological portions. Who are we? How do we know? What is the absolute truth, ultimately? After all this samsara is finished, what is it? What's reality? So if you can quote from these and establish your case, and these is very strong. So therefore it's very, very useful, to memorize and learn this, this Upanishad in terms of our preaching, things like that, talking to people. Violence is never good, but it's sometimes necessary to defend the weak against the strong when good arguments fail. Okay, very aphorism. So even verbally, usually we don't fight with people. If somebody wants to be, have their opinion, and I'm God, you're God, we're all God, God damn it. So it's okay, very good. You have your opinion. And if they don't want to, why waste our time? But if innocent people are becoming confused by this, for example, one girl, a blonde-haired girl, say like 17 years old, coming to our temple in San Francisco, kind of a rough area like that. After some time, she's a high school girl. She confided she'd already had 3 abortions at 17 years old. And she would say, well, I don't care. But she could tell she cared a lot. Her life was just ruined. And why? She just wasn't, because that's the ambient. What's abortion? Life comes from matter. There's no life. So abortion is just some convenience. Little inconvenience, pregnancies, we'll have an abortion. So these philosophies come to practical reality. There was one philosopher in Germany. His name now? Haeckel? His name is Haeckel. And he became pretty prominent. He wrote a book called Mysteries of the Universe, which was translated into 13 languages and sold, a million copies or something. Which in those days was phenomenal. He had Nobel laureates supporting his philosophy. His philosophy was that just like the species evolve, societies also evolve. And those that survive, that's the only measurement for whether it's good or not. It's survival of the fittest. And so therefore, different societies the species evolved biologically, and so therefore human beings have the right to dominate everybody else because we're the fittest. And then different cultures have been evolving, and therefore the Nazis, the Aryans, and the German culture was the best like that. And therefore, like inferior species, like people from Africa and stuff like that, they should be given a quick and painless death to promote the evolution of culture. It's very, very enlightening. That's his first name. He was a biologist and became like a philosopher. Then one German paper hanger, Adolf Schickelgruber, adopted this as a basis for his politics. And he changed his name to Adolf Hitler, and started the National German Social Worker Party, National German Social Worker Party, which is shortened as Nazi, National German Social Workers Party, like that. And then Second World War, which resulted in the deaths of unlimited numbers of people. If you read histories of the Second World War, it's just incredible how people were being killed. It was worked to death. It was unbelievable. But it all starts with philosophy, right? Then it goes to political science, it goes to practical application. So we're very, it's not like this some minor thing to study these things and know these things. It comes back to a very practical view of what is reality. So the Isha Upanishad then is very prominent part of the Vedic culture. And the very first part, if you look at the Sanskrit, and it's translated, yes, it seems to be saying this. Om Purnam, all together. Om Purnam Adaha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vasishyate. So who is this Purnam? What is this Purnam? It's a good question. It's starting like that. The absolute, the Om. Om is complete. Everything there is complete. I just come from worship. It's complete. Right? And even though so many complete units come from it, right, it still remains complete. Right? And so the purport that Prabhupada talks about this material world. The material world is complete. Now the prison may appear to have some deficiencies, some problems in the prison. But it's complete for its purpose. The prison has a purpose.
What is the purpose of the prison?
Rectify us, keep us from causing problems, to help us. So for that purpose, it's complete. There's certain shortages, there's certain problems, there's certain suffering in there. But that's proper. It's part of the whole thing. If I take some medicine and I feel certain kind of distress, it's a bitter medicine. That's part of the healing process. So thank you, like that. So everything's complete. That's kind of the purport, I guess, to the invocation. Then mantra one is also very, very potent. And I'll chant this together.
Ready? One, two, three.
Isha Vasham Idam Sarvam Yakincha Jagat Yam Jagat Tena Tiyak Tena Mandita Magrida Parshya Shivtanam.
Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. And mantra 2 continues with this idea. On page 23, mantra 2, we continue with the same idea. Ready?
Korvani vaha karmani jajivishakshatam samaha evam tvai nanye pektosi na karma vidyate nare.
One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. For that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. It's a very profound. So in Bhagavad Gita, Gita Upanishad, we find Krishna talking about all these things, about karma. As I'm reading this, I'm thinking of a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Everything is owned and controlled by the Lord. Bhoktaram yagnatapasyam sarvaloka maheshvaram suhridam sarvadehinam yavamam shanti mrityati. Identical conception. Bhoktaram yagnatapasyam. I'm the enjoyer of all this tapasya. Sarvaloka maheshvaram. I am the great controller of all the realms, all the places, all the worlds. Right? And I am. I'm everybody's friend. Like that. So Krishna is maintaining, if you have a friend, you're not going to allow him to be suffering with no food, everything else. Prabhupada says you're looking for work, you go to somebody and say, sir, I will work for you for 1 week for free. I won't even take lunch. And you see if it's a benefit for you or not. And if you make money from that. And he probably says, well, what person is not going to employ you? And he says, what gentleman is not going to give you lunch? so on. Yeah, so, you know, ordinary person, if you're there when he's having lunch, he'll give you something if he has something. What to speak of your friend, you know, he's going to say, oh, come on, check out some lunch like that, you know? And even if you're incorrect or you're improperly situated, you'll start, you'll think, boy, my friend's really, you know, in a really unfortunate consciousness, you know, getting back to normal, his happy, happy, normal self. So this is the basic principle. That is enough, everything is complete. There's enough for everybody. I lecture on economics, and professors and universities are amazed. You know, my God, it's such a concept. A professor in South America was saying that, you know, the concept of almost all economic models has been insufficiency. There's not enough, right? In the one of the most famous documents on social philosophy in the West is Plato's Republic, right? Plato's Republic. And one description, I want to read it. This is part of our classical studies, right? But I've seen one commentary. And the person says in the beginning, one friend says, oh, Socrates, you have so many ideas. Well, how would you establish the perfect society? And Socrates begins to describe the perfect society. And what he describes is a vegetarian society. People would harvest, they grow grains and barley and things like that and make bread. And they would live very happily together. So then his friend kind of laughs and says, but oh, Socrates, that's not practical, you know, people, you know, living on these grains and things like that. Maybe healthy, but it's just people wouldn't do that. What if you populated your city with meters, with pigs? He calls them. Then Socrates says, oh, then there'd be so many problems. We'd have to have more land to maintain these animals, more water. There'd be insufficiency, there'd be conflict between people like that. And then because we're killing animals, so natural tendency to be violent to others would be present in our consciousness like that. And then you need more rules, you need more strict things like that. You know? So after that, the Republic goes on that most people hear about. And it's pretty mild compared to what other philosophers have said, but it's compared to his original idea, it's much more violent, you know, and angry. So one philosopher commented, it is the best kept secret in Western philosophy that Socrates' original society was vegetarian. Yeah, you haven't heard this before. But that was his idea. Very austere, clean people, the Greeks. And they were inheriting this all from the Vedas. They comment that like that. Yeah. So that's what Prabhupada says in the first mantra, right? Ishavashmi dam sarvam. There's enough for everybody. Yeah. A basic economical principle is there's enough for everybody. Yeah. Other people comment and say, well, there's not enough. There's going to be fighting. Yeah. But no, first principle of Vedic economics is that there's enough. And also this follows to the Buddhists. One Buddhist phrase is, he who knows when enough is enough will always have enough. Right? He who knows when enough is enough, lunchtime, or house, or you know, so many things, you know, will always have enough. You know? And so Prabhupada especially takes this back to what? You already studied this. What principle? No. Vegetarian diet. Yeah. Is that human beings are not designed to eat meat. In many places it's supported. This is a very fundamental principle of our platform. Yeah. Because without being gentle to our brothers and sisters, then we're not going to live on this planet peacefully. Something like 85% of all the bats are dead. Yeah. Since the Americans came the Europeans came to North America, again, something like 85% of all the trees have been cut down. Yeah. So the trees are gone. The bats are responsible for pollinization, just like bees. And the bees are all dead, and the frogs are all dying. Well, what do you think is going to happen to us? Well, we'll replace it all by machines. We'll make machines that fertilize the plants. We'll make, you know, machines that will clone wood, big masses of wood. We'll clone that, you know. But all this idea that we can do anything we want to, we can conquer the world any way we want to, right? No, we live with other living beings. We have a quota. And it's not proper for us to kill, you know, our brothers and sisters, unless, you know, there's some problem. There's no food. People challenge sometimes, you know, why are you vegetarian? So, you know, verbal judo, I say, we're not vegetarian. Hare Krishna's all vegetarian. We're not vegetarian. If human beings are dying from starvation, the cows are being given sufficient grains and there's no milk, then it's unfortunate, but yes, to save people, you can kill animals. But it's not nice, you know. Again, any animal, you kill them, they'll struggle to live. You know, you can see that they don't want to do this, you know.
other hand, the plants and stuff is also karma, yes. When you kill a plant, you know, there's also karma, you know, a tree or something like that. But it's so mild that if you do this, you know, I'm a sinful person, I'm trying to get better, please let me, you know, live properly in this world and get better. You know, so I'm sacrificing this potato to you. Before, the Brahmanas used to do horse sacrifices and human sacrifices, but now we do, you know, potato sacrifices, our modern Hare Krishna Brahmins, like that. But it's a fact. We're on the altar, we're sacrificing this. And then not only does the fruit receive benefit, but the tree it came from receives benefit. So that, just like the Vedic horse sacrifices, the horse comes out with a new body, you know, he goes straight to heaven. Yeah? So performing this on a Vaishnava basis, under an acharya, then he adjusts like that. Yes, a murder has been done, yeah, but Krishna has adjusted it so actually it's for everybody's benefit. Because we're sincerely trying to give up the habit. Right? We're sincerely trying to give up this habit of killing. Right? Ahastani sahastanam apadani chatuspadam falguni falguna falguna tatra mahatam jiva jivasa jivanam. Right? Those with no hands are food for those with hands. Those with no feet are food for those with 4 feet. And the general rule holds above and below, above is below, that the weak are food for the strong. Like that. Yeah. And Hamlet and Shakespeare takes it to this point that bacteria are the strongest because they eat everybody in the end. Worms eat us. You know? So therefore they're the greatest. You know? So this is a material world. It's a dog-eat-dog world. You know? But I'm trying to give up this habit, and therefore I'm minimizing it, and I want to use this fruits, vegetables, milks, grains to become purified, to listen to the Vedas, to purify myself, to practice it, to try it, and become a completely perfect transcendental being. Right? How many people here would fight, would kill to maintain their jacket? You there. Would you kill somebody to maintain your jacket? But would you kill somebody to maintain your skin? So it starts kind of rip your skin off, would you?
Yeah.
Well, that's our position. You know, some lunatic would fight to maintain his jacket. You know, people like that in the middle hospitals who are just completely identified with their clothes, you know. Little children identify with their hair. The first time a little child gets a haircut, it's a whole war, you know. You know? They identify with their evacuation, their stool and urine. You know, this is about 3 years old, two years old, the terrible twos. Anamaya to pranamaya, that level. So as we become a human being, if we don't identify, you know, with these things, you know, yeah. And so, you know, we go animals. They'll kill to maintain their, you know, some cat. She has a rat, a mouse playing with it. You try and take it away, she becomes crazy because they're getting so much gratification from the sadistic thing of torturing this mouse. You know? So same with a tiger on a bigger scale. They'll kill you, you know, because you're taking away their mouse. Yeah. So we human beings naturally come to this point where we can understand these things. With a little help then, with being properly raised, it's very easy to understand I'm not this body. Huh? I can go through all kinds of austerities, as long as my mind is peaceful. Right? I'm satisfied. I'll lose my sight, my senses, I'll lose my sight, I'll lose my smell. Right now we're looking at the world through a mask. Well, how nice. But what if I lose the mask? Well, then you get a better view. You know? Of what's going on like that. You know? So the first verse is very important. The invocation is very important. It's worth memorizing, I would say. The second one is worth memorizing. Ishabhasham idam sarvam. You see Prabhupada quoting it many times. And it makes a very, very good basis for lectures on economics. And again, I was saying big professors commenting. This guy was Peru was commenting. He said, I was just thinking about this. Other cultures, how do they deal with these things? And there's more details. We can give very nice perspective on economics. The basic principle is that there's enough. And it's being organized. And if we live, and even like, was it John Robbins? He was, Baskin Robbins ice cream chain, famous. His son, John Robbins, wrote a book on vegetarianism. It's called Diet for a New America. Very statistically, you know, profound thing. And he makes this point again and again. And you see people, pieces of paper taken from his book that, you know, if 15% of Americans became vegetarian, there'd be enough food to feed all the hungry people in the world. And people in Africa are starving to death. They have one root for 3 days to chew on and suck like that sometimes. You know? I forget, every 3 seconds a baby dies from malnutrition. like that. Yeah. And so it's just, you know, it's all mismanagement. And we're not saying these people don't deserve it. You know, whatever we're getting, we deserve. You know, like that. And so therefore, okay, but still, we can help. We don't have to stand by idly. We can help people change their karma. You know? And so because of that, this principle probably is very practical. Is that everybody should change to, you say vegetarian, but we eat more than vegetables, right? You know, it's like, you know, people think like that, vegetarian. Eat salad. That's all you do, salad and canned broccoli or something. You know? You know, so many wonderful things. You know? So it's a big, important platform. So any comments? Yes, sir, questions? Yeah. Yeah. Milk. Yeah.
Yeah. Vitamins, they said that milk also has the animal fat, so if you just stay away from the skin, why not milk also?
No, if you stay away from animal skin. Well, we're not opposed to fat, as far as I know. There's almost no, I mean, every nutritionist, you'll die without fat, you know. So vegans get fat from nuts, from avocados. And there's so many sources of digestible food oil. Otherwise, they'd all be dead. You know, yeah. But and you can live without it. But the thing is, milk is a very natural food for human beings, according to Vedic wisdom. It's designed that way. And then I'm sure if he has the whole thing on his website. But if you go to our Anjana Sudha Academy website, jayaram.us, www.jayaramhanuman.us. You look in the archives, look under the links, you'll find one to Gopanga's, you know, vegetarian animal protection website. So one person, he's like a devotee, you know, smokes a little bit, but I know, he gave it up maybe, yeah. But anyway, he did a whole master's thesis on this, you know, accepted by the university. But his point was that, you know, nature is not kind. Because one vegan argument is that, you know, we're exploiting the cows, we're exploiting them by taking their milk, you know. But the natural situation is there's more than enough, you know, for the calf and human beings. They naturally produce milk for everybody. And it's a very symbiotic relationship. You know, human beings are meant to be the big brothers of everybody else. We contribute, just like the chickens contribute, the flies contribute, you know, the cows contribute. Everything is purnam. Everybody has their job and everybody has their rights. The bull has a right to pull things. You can't take that away from him by machines and stuff like that. And that's how he has a right to earn his livelihood, by working hard, pulling things, and he earns his grains, his food. You know? So the same way, the nature is not kind. You see cows and bulls in wild, they're attacked by wolves, they get tumors, they fight over sexual relations, you know, they die in childbirth often. You know? And so then when protected by human beings, animal husbandry, that frame, then they're very happy. They live very happy. They're very happy. If you live in a Hare Krishna farm community, you see what a nice relationship. You're walking towards some house at night and suddenly you feel something wet on the back of your hand. You look down, there's two dogs there. They don't even, you know, sniffing you with their nose. They don't even bark at you. Yeah? Because they're no afraid. You know, and you're sitting down and suddenly a squirrel runs up. This is my experience. When a squirrel runs up and looks in your pocket and looks up at you and, you know, with dirt on her nose and chastises you and goes away. What is this? Oh, we put nuts in our pockets and the squirrels, they come and take them. Yeah? So they all know. You know? In the real Vedic culture, all the animals know if you have a big problem, go try and find a human being. They'll help you. In our modern civilization, animals know the most dangerous species are the human beings. They'll torture you, they'll kill you, everything else. You know? So very nice. You see, the animals are very intelligent. And when they're raised properly, they can, in the mode of goodness, they can develop nice qualities. They can communicate, they can express their feelings, and they're people. They're people. You know, they are. You can say, I mean, many stories. This book, Diet for a New America, has many stories. And so when we're integrated with them, it's very nice. So the natural symbiotic relationship is human beings. You know, the chickens stay around your house. We don't eat them. They chase away all the scorpions, all these insects and stuff, keep it, patrol the area, pick up garbage, make nice noises. You know, it's very nice music all day long. They look very beautiful. you know? And then they're protected from the foxes and things like that. Yeah? So everybody has their position. So this is our point, is that, you know, you'll find, you know, look at it scientifically, and also the Vedic, you know, wisdom is even more scientific, is it's a natural symbiotic relationship. You know? And a healthy cow, when the number of cows equals 20, the number of deaths equals the number of births. One bull, one cow. Okay, you get calves. Maybe like four calves, five calves. And then from they produce, so more and more and more. But at a certain point, they start dying. So it's not like we're going to, well, if you just allow them to breed, they'll cover the earth. The whole earth will be covered with cows. Like that. You know? No, at 20, the number of deaths equals the number of births. So it's very stable then, about 20 cows like that. Okay, let's figure. And also you can adjust this by different simple, you know, arrangements. But let's figure 10 female, 10 males. Okay, you got 10 females. Lady cow gives milk naturally 1/3 of her life. No pressure, no just natural, you know, love life and love, happy relationships and happy family life. So that means at any one time you'll have 3 1/3 cows giving milk. Yeah? That's easily enough milk for 20 families. Yeah. An adult, if you've ever had, you know, milk from a happy cow, one cup is all you can digest. It's rich. You know, our milkman in India wasn't cheating us by mixing it with water. We were mixing it with water because it was just too rich. You know? So one cup a day is enough for an adult of all vitamins, minerals, everything else like that. You know? So it means every family has to maintain one cow. Maybe somebody maintains 5 cows and somebody else, you know, 4 other families help him in some way, you know. But basically, you know, who, you know, if you have a little bit of space, who couldn't maintain 1 cow? You know, how much does she eat? You know, and very nice pet, very friendly, you know, like that. So it's all an illusion. It's all mismanagement. It's all exploitation. It's all demoniac activity. You know? And so this is our position, that milk is a very healthy food for adults, especially for fertilizing brain tissues. Lactose and stuff like that really goes to the brain. You know, and so therefore, our comment that is that all vegans are airheaded. You know? And if you try and argue with them, you discover that they all, like, you know, maybe they had enough milk when they were children. You know, if they've given it up now. But if you're raised that way, it's very difficult to have maybe other sources, but animal, I even have like 7 different kinds of fat in milk, cow's milk. It's a very, very, what's the word, sophisticated food. And when you boil it 3 times, bring it to a boil, stir the bubbles back in, bring it to a boil again, stir the bubbles back in, bring it to a boil again, and take it hot with sugar. It contains tryptophan, and it goes right to your brain. Like that. And then you read the Krishna book, Krishna's pastimes, and go to sleep, dreaming about Krishna. Yeah. If you don't boil it 3 times, it goes down, and you have to wake up in the middle of the night and go pass urine. You know? It's a very subtle science, you know? The science of hot milk. Like that, yes. Many women are proud of their cooking, but how many can actually boil milk properly? Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole thing. And you can actually feel it. When you're stirring it, it becomes thin all of a sudden, because, you know, the fats are dissolving, and that formula is very digestible. You know? And when you spin the stuff for homogenizing it, the oxytocin gets so small it penetrates into your cells improperly. You know, so many things. Hold on, stop here. I'm going to go on forever about milk and vegetarianism. But there's this book by John Robbins is very good. You know, and many things like that about, you know, the situation. But basically that is, it's a very natural symbiotic relationship. It's a very natural food. We need fat. Otherwise, you're all going to die. You'll just die. You eat sufficient meat, as much meat as you want to. If it's lean meat, there are many stories of this from hunters trapped in this, you know, in the mountains for the winter. All the meat they wanted, but it wasn't enough fat on it. They just starved to death. Starved to death, you know, because it wasn't sufficient fat. Yeah. Okay, so we go on here, different verses. And we're on text number 17. As I'm remembering, he talks a lot about social life, right? He says, if you see the Supreme Lord in all living beings and everywhere, then what do you have to fear? You know, or why should you cause exploitation to anybody else? So it's a very, very fundamental point he makes about that. So he goes on describing basically how to live, right? Yeah. What else does he talk about? Anybody remember anything else? Yeah. Seeing God in everybody and all creatures, God is, you know, God is there, and the demigods that control the weather, the karma, prosperity, in my friends and my enemies. And if I see everybody like that, then I don't have any enemies or any friends. Everybody's my friend. And there's nothing to fear, or so on. Remember one nice Christian song, a chant. Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ to my left. You know, you'd be chanting it very nicely. Christ to my right, Christ above me, Christ below me. It's very nice, you know. And it finishes off, Christ in the heart of everyone. Very nice, you know. It's the same conception. I mean, peaceful. You chant this every day. Chant this every day and you feel peaceful, you know. Everything's okay, you know, right? Yeah, yeah. By hearing this thing, oh, hearing this, you know. So very fundamental conceptions. You know? In the Bhagavad Gita, same things are there. Many times we find Prabhupada saying in here, this is the Vedic idea, this is the Vedic truth, but it's better explained in Bhagavad Gita. It's better explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Because it is. This is just a kind of general explanation for people who are, you know, starting off in a general fashion. We don't want to talk, disturb them. We want to talk in a very kind of simple fashion to get their attention like that. Yeah? Buddha said, right, work out your salvation with diligence. What is that? He didn't say, just do it. You know, you should focus your life. Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. Well, what is the result of the examination? We'll get to that later. But at least at first accept the principle that, you know, that life is more than eat, drink, and be merry. Right? You know? So that's a, you know, big step for a lot of people. It takes some shock, usually. You got to die, or some near family relation has to die, or something has to happen to shock them. You know, like that. You know? And then they begin to think, well, what's it all about? You know? I can't eat, drink, and be merry without Mary. Mary's dead. So where's the eat, drink, and be merry, you know? Eat, drink, and be merry with Mary, you know? Wow. You know? Yeah? Anyway, you can go on and on with all these things. Anybody, anything else? We're on the 18 texts, 18 Puranas. We're on text number 17. Yeah, yes, sir.
I have a question. Like, oh. You mentioned how Vyasa is one of the six authorities.
One of the six, yes, the Darshan, yeah.
But he's the only one to compile the Vedas?
He's Veda Vyas. He divided them. Yeah. So again, besides those, are even also Shaivite scriptures, agamas. You know, I don't, you know. Again, it's so long ago. Probably saying that modern scholarship, they really can't go much more than, like, you know, a few hundred years before Christ. So my own investigation of Vastu architecture, serious research into what's available from modern scholars and from the internal traditions, and it's a fact. And they also kind of agree that, you know, 500 BC, you're really speculating. Even they say what was happening. You know, was it? So you don't really know. Somebody find this, they find that. Here's some Samhita from the 7th century. You know, what is that? It's 1,000. 1,300 years ago. It's a long time for a book, you know, if it even exists. You know. Mostly what exists, I think, are copies or something of things from the 5th century, like that, you know, Brahmihara and architecture. And then that's referring to something else. Okay, so therefore, if three different ancient texts say this exists, it doesn't exist now, therefore it probably existed. But we don't really know. You know, we can speculate pretty reasonably. But beyond that, 500 BC, who knows what? You know? Like this. This is like somebody may find this, you know, 1,000 years from now and say, oh, there was an Isa Upanishad, and it appears that the first part with the darker letters was the actual Upanishad, you know, and the other part was a commentary by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, you know, Ananda Charan Bhaktivedanta Swami, like that, you know. A.C. means Ananda Charan. No, it means, you know. Yeah, you see these things in history. So there are other scriptures that Shaiva traditions don't accept any of those Sadarshans. And they had their own, you know, Shaivite traditions in their agamas. But you may find they also say, well, yes, there was one Veda. You know, it was produced in different ways like that. And then Vyasa, He created a certain tradition which was powerful, and Shankara follows it, and then other, you know, others follow it. Yeah. Probably, maybe all the Alawars also accept Vyasa. Yeah. Yeah, the Shankara's tradition.
So
yeah. But they don't accept that. Yeah. They different, of course, you know, Prabhupada says that Shankara established something like what, like seven different mats with different names like that. And he said even though there is a formal, you know, what's the word, symmetry between them, they've all developed their own particular slogans and own particular ideas like that. You know, and they argue amongst themselves. It's the same with the Catholic Church. Different groups have different things like that, you know, amongst the Hare Krishnas, you know, they're different groups, you know, like that. Yeah. So, you know, they accept, you know, Vyasadeva in different ways. And Prabhupada's mentioning, is that some people say that Bhagavatam was compiled in the 12th century by one monk named Bhopadev. You know, he's a very brilliant guy and stuff like that, you know. But now there's the actual evidence, you know, Radhika's pointing out in this DVD is, he said, no, there's just stuff that pushes it back to like the 4th century. Yeah, yeah. You know, the actual form we have, you know, back to the 4th century and things like that. Yeah. So this way of knowing by examining bones, very difficult, you know. Rational empiricism, digging things up, looking at that, speculating. So our point, we accept that, but our primary evidence is Shruti. Evam param param praptam imam rajar shayo vidahu sa kalaneha mahato yoganashto param tapa. Yeah. So it's Krishna Bhagavad Gita. It's coming down from authorities. You're hearing like that, like now. And then somebody doesn't deviate. You can cross reference it with the text, you know. And yeah. And that way it goes on very nicely, you know. And if it's broken, then God comes and reestablishes it. Yeah. Yeah. And you can directly experience it. You know? I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm in a lot better position to investigate it. Before, I was always intoxicated. My brains were spaced out by television, you know, this kind of thing, eating this and that. But now I'm living a yogic life, diet, and my intelligence is more clear. I can think about things more clearly from every aspect. I'm in a better position to investigate this problem. Yeah. And some of the things are just, yeah, obviously it's true. You know? So, yeah, we have, I don't know if the conclusion is true or not, but from what I can see of the conclusion, it seems to be this way, and this pathway seems to be the best pathway, like that. So we don't require blind faith. You know, we require people only to apply what they can apply. If somebody tells you it's not good to take heroin, you should eat globish mums instead, and you try it and it works, then if you're a faithless rascal, you'll go back to heroin. But if you're a faithful guy, you realize, no, I can do this. I get enough sweets and everything else, I can calm down my horrible passions and anger and stuff like that, you know. You know, okay, this is better, you know. Yeah? Okay, text number 17. Actually, before that, one text. To me, the three most important texts in the whole thing are the invocation, text number 1, and text number 15. Somebody may say, you know, do you know Sanskrit? And what do you say? Huh? Yeah. On the airplane, was one movie, and these guys were fighting with this demon, and the demon asked them, she said, are you a god? And the guy said, well, no. And then she blew them off the side of this building, and they almost fell off. There's one black guy, and they're hanging there, and the black guy said to the white guy, Weezer, in the future, if somebody asks you if you're a god, you say, yes, sir. Yeah. Okay. So my response to this is, I say, I have a working knowledge like that. Yeah. And, you know, Sanskrit is unlimited. The Lord Chaitanya said the rules of Sanskrit grammar are eternal, like the holy name of Krishna itself. And that's pretty eternal. Amongst eternal things, some things are more eternal. So the holy name is really eternal, you know? So he's putting it, the rules of Sanskrit grammar are eternal, like the name of Krishna itself. I think there's like 400 rules for Sandhi. It's an incredible number of things. Just how to put the things together, what to speak of what it means, what to speak of the grammar and the poetry and the proper metaphors and uses of all these things, you know. Yeah. So it's enormous. Yeah. Dr. Kumar Chandra Prakash Singh, friend, head of the Hindi studies at Baroda University, Nitya Gaur's his father, he said, if you're born in a Brahmin family, you start speaking Sanskrit from the time you're 5 and 6 years old, still, many of these sections in the Vedas are so obscure, you can't figure out what they mean, really. So somebody who's been studying, you know, a big professor, studying Sanskrit for 7 years, and starts to translate the Vedas and give explanation, he says, it's a joke. It's ridiculous that you can, you know, you say you know all these things. Somebody who knows the culture, you know, and has a tradition, who learns, he'll be humble about what this actually means and things like that. So do you know Sanskrit? Anybody who says he knows Sanskrit, for the most part, is a self-confessed liar. You know? More likely, he says, I have been studying and I have good knowledge and this and that. You know? So I, you know, also, Tim, I always quote the verse, Bhagavad Gita 15:15. What is that? Sarvashichaham hridisani visto matasvachar jnanam apovanam cha vedais cha sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta vid veda krid eva chaham. So it's worth memorizing at least that much Sanskrit. Vedais cha sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta vid veda krid eva chaham. I've forgotten most of it. But I am the compiler of the Vedas. By all the Vedas I am to be known. I know the Vedas as they are. Vedanta vid, Veda krid. I am the maker of the Vedas. So that's Sanskrit. You know, it means to know Krishna. And if you don't know Krishna, then all your Sanskrit knowledge is null and void. So it's a very, you know, potent text. You know, 15:15. Vedais cha sarver aham eva vedyo. Vedanta vid, Veda krid, eva chaham. And very clear. You know? So, East Upanishad, text number 15, invocation 1 and 15. Yeah. Maya, how's it go? Maya patre, no? Hiranmayena patrena satya sya pihitam mukam tatvam pravanavavenu satya dharmaya drishyate. We're going to practice this here. Okay. Please repeat. Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukam tatvam pushan apavrinu satyam dharmaya dristaje. Okay, if you can do it with the book closed, do it. Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukam tvatram pusham apavrenu satya dharmaya drishyate drishtaje. Yeah, I have to practice that. Yeah. Oh my Lord, the sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kind of remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. So Sanskrit is pretty clear. Hiranmayena patrena. You know, dazzling effulgence. Satyasya pihitam mukam. Mukam. This is very clear. It means face. So you may try and twist it this way and that way, but here's a very clear verse in the Upanishad, which you can quote. And remember now, 15:15? Well, now we have 15:15:15. Right? Text number 15. Yeah, like that. Yeah? And very clear. He has effulgence. Remove that. Show me your face. Yeah, very personal. And then finally today, text number 17. Because now we've finished off everything. We've lived a life. We haven't killed cows or animals. We've been generous to all living beings. We've seen that Krishna's everywhere. Vayur anilam amritam. Atedam bashmantam shariram. Omkrato smarakritam shmara. Krato smarakritam shmara. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, And let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices. And because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. It's a very nice purport. And probably starts off by point, but starts off by focusing on this point, this temporary body. Right? We can get the bodies of bacteria. We can get the body of fish. If we evolve from that, we become vegetables. If we evolve from that, we become worms. If we evolve from that, we become birds. If we evolve from that, we become mammals. Right? So the plants grow on the water. They eat the water and the nutrients. The worms eat the plants. The birds eat the worms. You know. And then the bipeds and the mammals eat the birds. Like that. Yeah. So this is kind of the process of dying your way up. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Yeah. So, but a human form of life, he's saying here, let his temporary body be burnt to ashes. We can appreciate all these things. Yeah? We can appreciate by studying, by doing pranayama and things like this. We can appreciate that I'm not this body. You know, myself now, for example, now if I either eat like a big feast, I can feel how my prana has become contaminated, sluggish. And because my consciousness is absorbed in it, my mind has become sluggish. I think I'm this body. You know, cold shower, hot shower, insult. You know? So then I chant and dance. I do yoga. Purify this. Try to avoid becoming contaminated in the future. Better and better. You know? Then I realize that when the life airs are properly balanced and everything else, it becomes transparent. There's some madman coming to kill people with black jackets on. Uh-oh. You're in big trouble. Yeah. So the other people too, right? Yeah. Over here, another one over here too. A couple. Yeah. She's in trouble too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what's the most sane thing? Take off the jacket and toss it in the corner, you know, like that, right? The Terminator, Terminator 6, he's been programmed to kill, you know, to punch holes in black jackets. You know, the best thing is just toss it in the corner, you know? But there's one problem, you know? How can I get the jacket off? I'm attached to chocolate. I'm attached to science fiction movies. I'm attached to ladies' fashion magazines. I'm attached to, you know, this and that. I'm attached to this and that. All these attachments, and then, you know, asana, pranayama, then dharana. It means to withdraw like that. So we have to be able to get free from all these tensions, anxieties. You know, in my last lifetime, this happened, that happened, and I still have this knot. Okay, I let it go. You know, and finally, I'm here. You know, now I can withdraw, you know, and go inside and find out who I am without the jacket, right? So that's the whole process of yoga. However you do it, you have to accomplish the same thing. Hatha yoga, Ashtanga yoga, Bhakti yoga. You got to accomplish the same thing. So for every process in the Hatha yoga system, there's a corresponding process in the Bhakti yoga system. And again, it's being emphasized. You see this. You got to do that. You got to do this pratyahara. Come out of the body when you're chanting. You know? And see, I'm not the tongue. I'm not the jaw. I'm not the mind, I'm not the intelligence. I'm behind all these. It's so pure, you know, so elevated. Yeah? Like that. Yeah? And okay, go back in if I have to, for different reasons like that. But at a moment's notice, out. Yeah? Escape death. Yeah? So, it's the different bodies, this human body is very possible, very easy to do this by following yoga, to appreciate that this temporary material body in the end is going to be burnt to ashes. You see fire, you smell fire, but the essence of fire is the tactile feeling. You know, fire is prana. Whatever you can feel is prana. It's air, right? Hard and soft, heat and cold. You know, so is there prana in this table? Is there energy here? Try and tear it apart. You find there's a lot of energy there. Yeah, but it's all in equilibrium. It's all in balance like that. You know. You close your eyes and you can feel a candle, right? You can feel it. The prana is there in that candle, right? And what is it trying to do to the prana in your skin? What's the relationship between the candle and the prana in your skin? Huh? Burning? What does burning mean? Huh? It's stimulating, but it's going to go. It's going to be a little bit more than stimulating if you hold your hand there for some time. What's happening? Well, you can feel it. When I was studying karate, for our black belt in karate, yeah? You get an electric frying pan, you put sand in it, and you pass your hands over it. Don't even touch it. Wow! okay, Hare Krishna. Okay. Oh, you do it 10 times every day, grasshopper. Okay, you know. So you concentrate the prana like that, you know. You actually can do it. You can't see it. That's the third level. The second level is a tactile level. So after some time, you just develop this by this gross practice, how to concentrate the prana. And at that point, you know, when you're good in my school, third degree black belt, Ranking Master was fifth degree, you can punch through 3/4-inch plywood. This is 3/4-inch, but it's not plywood. Plywood means, you know, contrary. It's more tough than regular wood with glue in between. Imagine that, right? Your hand or my hand would just crush, even if a metal bar tried to push it through, just break. But these guys' knife hand, not like this, not like this, like this. Yeah. Ha-ha, your heart, ha-ha, your spleen, ha-ha. Yeah. So they can do this. It's not a joke. They can actually do this. Because it's prana, it's pranayama, it's contracting. But usually they don't go to any very high level. It's mostly just for, you know, for that levels of technique, martial arts, something like that. Become peaceful, stop smoking, yeah, like that. Yeah. So this is what's happening. The fire means that the life airs are being just broken down. The form is being broken down and turned back into the general reservoir of prana, you know, under the control of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, like that. I give you a cup, a clay cup, but you smash it, it becomes clay, right? Yeah, it's no longer my cup, like that. Yeah, so he's telling it, let it happen. I'm going to sacrifice all these things, and now, my Lord, please remember my sacrifices. So, again, nihabi kramo nasho sti pratyabayo navidyate swapamapi ashadharmasya triyate mahato bayat. There's no loss or diminution. He's describing Buddhi Yoga, second chapter, first yoga. He said, this yoga, he's glorifying it. Just do it. There's no loss, right? Whatever you get from this is eternal benefit. Just do it. Wonderful, not temporary benefit. Yeah? And so the same way, whatever sacrifices we do for Krishna, you know, Prabhupada says Krishna, well, he always remembers that. Yeah? And even if we have some deviation on the path, it's okay. You know, our sacrifice potency keeps building up. The moon, nobody complains about the moon. Oh, there's dark spots on the moon. You know, like that. No, the moonlight is flooding everything. So in a flood of devotional service, we may deviate because we're still 1 foot on the boat and 1 foot on the land. You know, so sometimes we may be a little unsteady. You know? But as we advance, you know, we're just really on the land. You know, and so our unsteadiness becomes very small and it just becomes... it's washed away. Yeah? You do something wrong, you don't even have to compensate for it. Because your activities are so intense, and it's just like, you know, some bank robbery, and some, you know, bullets are flying, and some police officer pushes you to the ground, and you bruise your face like that. And he looks, he says, sorry. You say, don't worry, it's okay, just keep shooting. You know? You know? You don't even mention it, you know? Because it's just, you know, part of the situation that happens like that. You know? So as we go on in devotional service, then our sacrifices accumulate. This is probably second purport. Accumulate until finally they become, you know, sufficient that even though if we're not perfect at the time of death, and even though we forget Krishna, Krishna doesn't forget us. And he says here that, you know, the mantra, the guy is, you know, is asking God, hey, remember I did sacrifice. Did you forget? Like that. You know? And Prabhupada says, even if we don't ask Krishna, he'll remember. He'll remember, you know, like that. You know, that we do these things. Yeah? Yeah. And then, you know, what happens? And Prabhupada's saying again is that we can understand it. A person, only a person can, you know, can talk about having some body after it's all finished, about having some existence after it's finished, about me, you know, remember my sacrifices and everything else. Yeah? So I'm always talking about the impersonal aspect, the personal aspect. But he says, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, these are explained more clearly like that. Here you've got to, like, just analyze it logically to show this fact. It must be a person talking about what's happening to him after he's finished and after the body's finished and God is there remembering the sacrifices that we did and giving us a result. And what is the result? I don't think it says to go, I think what Prabhupada says to how far he takes it, you know, to go to God, you know, to associate with God, you know. But what does that mean? Well, I don't know. Yeah, so it's preliminary. Right? Isopanishad is a preliminary book. But it's nice in public purports. And especially, you know, my understanding is good for this, dealing with these Vedic people like that. So, any comments or questions? Any sacrifice? Okay? Yeah? Yes, sir. Yeah, in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, no? Jnana Yoga. Yeah. Yeah. Yoga Brasta. Yeah, somebody who's fallen. And Arjuna asks that question, well, what if somebody deviates from this yoga? You know? He gave up, you know, meat, fish, eggs, he gave up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meeting, all these good things. And now he doesn't get, you know, he doesn't also get the result of yoga, whatever that is. You know, so what's that? What happens to him? Is he like a cloud in the sky with no position? Yeah, like that. And then Krishna says, no. He says, one who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. So nothing but benefit. And he says that if you fall after a short time, then you take birth in America, you take birth in some kind of family of rich merchants, and you can enjoy life, but still there's an opportunity. You know, but if you fall after a long time, then you take birth in a Charya family, where from your very birth, you're instructed in self-realization. You're given this opportunity and facility from your very birth. Probably all of us, we can appreciate, wow, I've wasted so many years. If I'd known about this when I was younger, man, where would I be now? What could I have done like that? Developed, you know? Yeah. So there, very clearly, chapter 6, he talks about it. And here in the purport, Prabhupada also quotes Bhaktivedanta Thakur, quoting this verse, Api Chait Sudara Charo Bhajate mam ananyabhak sadureva samanya tavyaha samya vyadeshitohisa. Even if he falls down, he's still, still a saintly person, like that. And as I was paraphrasing this thing about the moonlight, And so yeah, your light. You know, if you fall down, then you, in this lifetime, you're still auspicious. Yeah? And so many stories, practical stories of devotees in ISKCON. You know, many people were complaining. When Prabhupada left, you know, the organization kind of was falling apart in many ways and this and that. So people were complaining, wow, I was a brahmachari. I quit college. And now I'm like, you know, 28 years old, 30 years old, and I haven't got a college education. I got my family to maintain. And ISKCON, you cheated me and this and that, you know. I'm telling you, paraphrasing a specific story now. So I got to get a job. Okay, well, Blockbuster Video is always hiring. Check out people, there I am, you know. But within 3 weeks, I'm in charge of the shift, you know, because I've developed all these interpersonal skills, sense control, I pick up everything quickly, I understand what's going on, the broad perspective, I can deal with people, you know, I don't get involved in fights. So then after 3 weeks, I'm already, okay, can you be like the shift manager, close the store down, I'm not a dishonest person, you know, so then people can appreciate that. You can trust this guy with the money at the night time to count it up. So then right away, within 3 weeks, he was already like, you know, in a better position, making more income. And then within 3 months, they were offering him like a career training position for Blockbuster. We'll send you to college. We'll train you, you know, in administration, that kind of stuff. So you can be like a, you know, higher manager, as a, you know, whatever like that. So many times devotees have this experience that what they learned was actually the best thing. You know, the technical stuff you can pick up. And especially if you're one devotee, he left ISKCON, and he was kind of disturbed with Krishna, you know, kind of like, okay, I've been serving you for 5 years, so hard, sacrificing. If you're an honest guy, you'll compensate me, you know. So then he wanted to go back to college. So he's looking for a job, he couldn't find anything. Then he saw that the Department of the Interior had a job for a night watchman on Alcatraz Island. This is where they, you know, the cells are still there where they strap the guys in and burn their brains out. And, you know, it was really kind of a spooky place. And iron doors swinging at night and big empty cell blocks, you know. And so during the daytime, there's about maybe 15 people there to run the park. Boats come and go and, you know, these people see it. And they go at night. And it was designed as a prison because the water currents around there are so difficult you can't swim off the place. You'll drown. So when you're there at night, you're there. Yeah. So his job was, 6 o'clock? It's 4 o'clock. Oh, well, someone in the afternoon, he would take the last boat out, and all his staff would like tell him what's going on. They would get in the boat and he'd be there alone all night with some kind of like radio telephone. And I think all he had to do was call in at 10 o'clock at night and say that there's nothing here. The whole time he was there, it was 3 years, only one time he had to tell somebody we're closed, you know, don't tie your boat up, go away, and they went away like that. You know? So he was getting paid. So he would go to Berkeley in the school in the daytime, go back to Alcatraz Island, do all of his homework till 10 o'clock at night, you know, say this thing and go to bed. He was being paid all the time he was sleeping. And because there was no distraction from studying, you know, he finished off like his four, and even more than that, with minor things too, basically a 5-year degree in 3 years, first class, and got, of course, a fantastic job after that. You know? So he would see, he's like, yeah, Krishna arranged it. And I wanted this material enjoyment, so Krishna arranged so I could enjoy the very, you know, can't beat it, you know, like that. You know? So in the next life too, in this life, in the next life, you know, then there'll be nothing but benefit from this. Yeah? So, kind of final questions or comments?
Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Krishna consciousness, you build a character.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean, just needed more in that material
world. Yeah.
Good character, you're an honest person.
We kind of like don't build it, but we uncover it. Yeah, yeah. It's there. We have good character. We're all angels, but we purify ourselves and our good character comes out. You know, like that. And once you've got that, it's everything is okay. You know, you can acquire technical abilities and knowledge. It's, you pick it up. Yeah, like that. One girl, she was Kanu Pandit, he's the president in Peru for a long time. And he was really supporting the Gurukula because he says, I can see the difference. You know, my son's nice. He's a devotee. You know, he smokes marijuana sometimes with his friends. But he chants. And he likes devotees. And he tries to do some rounds. You know, he'll take a vow to do 2 rounds a day for 6 months or something. He'll do it, you know. And so on like that, you know. He says, but he left the Gurukula after some early age, you know. He said, my other daughter, she went through the whole thing and she says she's a devotee. She likes to be with devotees. That's her life, you know. So on. So he said, I can see the difference, you know. So his daughter, Devaki, she is. She's just very, you know, she's a lady. People think it's point. She's a lady. She's very, this character. Anybody would be very impressed with her. Oh, nice person, you know. And so she's very, also physically very healthy, everything else, and the dancing. And then something about computer science. She had to know something about, she wanted to, you know, some project. So she just asked people this and that, this and that, this and that. She got exactly what she needed to know within a matter of like a week. Was doing all this stuff, you know, rather than taking a course for 2 months or, you know, 6 months and this and that. She probably says a devotee picks up the essence of everything very quickly. So what do I, technical ability, these kind of things, you just find out what you need to do, everything else, and just learn it, you know. And many times with corporations, they don't want you to go to school, you know, because it doesn't, you know, they're teaching you things you really don't need to know. You know, for their particular, you know, they go to school, but we want you to know these things. We need this, you know. The problem is usually all these kind of things are all apprenticeship. The best thing is to get tossed right into the business and just learn right there. You know, people can explain to you and pick it up very quickly. Yeah. It's all so-called modern education. Yeah. 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 Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. I'm just repeating what I heard. Paw paw. Yes. Yes.
So there's no other question of fitting in.
Yeah. two Irish guys got off the boat, you know, in 1895 or something, you know, the roaring 90s, America. Went through immigration, the new country, land of opportunity, it's not like restricted like Europe, you know, and they were walking around as free citizens or immigrants in America, New York, you know, all these different things happening, and they saw this big barrel of crabs, you know, there's one barrel said like 50 cents, the other barrel was like $1, money was worth more, and they've ever seen a barrel of crabs, they're always crawling on top of each other, it's really like spooky, you know, and it's, you know, biting each other. So then the 50 cent barrel, one crab was stepping on the other crabs more effectively and biting them, and he would get up on top and grab the edge of the barrel, and somebody would pull him, he'd fall back down again, you know. So this went on several times, they were watching, and finally he grabbed the barrel and pulled himself up and fell over into the $1 barrel, like that, right? So the one Irishman said to the other, just see, only in America. Right? So that's the fight, right? To get into the $1, you know, so you die. And you get slaughtered by material nature. More prestige. I know, you have a bigger funeral, you know, like that. Yeah, bigger, you know, endowment when you're dead. Yeah. People have something, you know, I've seen, oh, a sannyasi, you get to travel all the time, eat opulent food, oh, you're so fortunate. Yeah, it's hell. My real conclusion is a sannyasi traveling all over the world, seeing all kinds of lifestyles, that everybody is suffering. And any idiot who's envious of anybody else in the material world is a fool. There's nothing, no lifestyle here which is enviable. You know, everybody knows that. It was this song, boy, sung by Alfred Noyes, Richard Corey. It's a song that Simon and Garfunkel did it, you know. Richard Corey lives up in a big house on the hill. He was born into a rich family, this factory. I hear about the parties and the orgies on his yacht. It's a nice song. And I have to work in this factory. I'm struggling and this and that. Wasn't I surprised? Wasn't I amazed when I read the paper this morning that last night Richard Corey went home and put a bullet through his head? That's it. He's suffering. Yeah? There's nobody. And usually the materially enviable positions are the ones where you suffer more. Right? Cocaine is God's way of telling you you're making too much money. Yeah. Expensive. Yeah. And then there's so many things. It's hell. Usually the more money you have in the material world, the more you suffer. I mean, these modern houses, big houses, you see them walking around some areas where the rich people live. But if you go inside, they have now, they have these things, these safe rooms, you know, where you can go inside where it's a steel vault for human beings, where if someone breaks in your house and tries to attack you, you run in there and slam the door and you're locked in and you have oxygen. You know, telephone to call the police from the outside and stuff like that. The security problems are, you know, always afraid. Someone will kidnap my children and mail their ears back, you know, as a threat for, you know, their life. And this before I left India, some executive for some software company, they just ran off with his kid on the motorcycle when he was going to school. Just walked off, just ran off with him. You know, I don't know what the result was, you know. But that's, you know, material worlds. The so-called enviable positions are the ones that are the most, you know, unhappy. Yeah. Om Purnam Adaya Purnamidam. Let's take my quota, and then everything will be okay. You know, Krishna will take care of me. And I can live peacefully in this world. Do austerities for purpose. Every austerity I do will have a good benefit. You know. And then first principle, I can become immortal. Yeah. And then I can see your face. Like that. Yeah? Isha Upanishad ki. Yeah. Gita Upanishad ki. Yeah. So next week, number 18. Thank you very much. Conclusion. Huh?
Conclusion of Isha Upanishad.
Tomorrow, yeah. And you start the Gita Upanishad. Bhagavad Gita.
Isha summarized.
Huh? Turn loose the monkeys.